You're listening to the Retrovore Union Square Market Report.
This week at the market, we saw temperatures finally reach the 60s. This made for a crowded market as everyone seemed to come out of hibernation to enjoy the spring-like weather. Our first farmer this week is Ted Blue of Oak Grove Plantation. He farms in New Jersey with his wife and four children. They manage to produce an amazing variety of goods, from popcorn to pork. In fact, we think he may be the most diverse farmer at Union Square, and he can trace his farming roots back to the 1620s, where his family had a farm on what is now 25 Broadway in Manhattan.
Then we'll talk to John Adams from Hudson Valley Organic. He's been at the Green Market for 25 years and sells certified organic, antioxidant-packed microgreens and sprouts.
The last vendor this week is Fred Price of Fifth Floor Farm Kitchen. He's been baking with his wife for 25 years, and he sources many of his ingredients, like maple syrup and apples, from the local farmers at the market.
Name is Ted Blue. We were at Oak Grove Plantation. It's a family farm. There's my wife, Susan, my son, Eric, my daughter, Charity, my daughter, Amanda, and also my son, JB, or Jonathan. And they're all working on the farm. Today, they're working on herbs, and we have a lot of herbs with us today. We grow everything organically. We have a mesclun salad mix today that is cut. Soon we will have it in flats. From there we go into another herb, which is nasturtiums, and they're excellent in salads. You can use the leaves and the flowers. From there we go into all the summer produce, which can be starting out with like zucchini, cucumbers. We get into watermelons, cantaloupes, heirloom tomatoes. I think we have 180 varieties of heirloom tomatoes this year. Hot peppers, there we have close to 300 varieties. Sweet peppers, I think it's around 150 varieties. And when I speak of like sweet peppers, a lot of people think of just a green bell pepper. We have all shapes, sizes, and all colors except green. Green is a mistake if it shows up on our stand. We really want full ripe, full flavor. And that's what the customers want, too. They've come accustomed to that. And then we go into the fall where we get into our winter squash and pumpkins and eventually down to bare bones for the winter for baked goods, popcorn. And year-round, we have our pork products. We also have flour, pancake mix, and we sell those all year-round and in the winter. Well, my grandfather had a farm in Pennsylvania. And he wasn't maybe as diversified as what we are, but I learned one thing from him, that you don't put basically all your eggs in one basket. It definitely pays off, because if you have a failure with something because of either weather conditions or disease or insect pressure, and being an organic farm, that is a critical thing to consider, because we don't have an arsenal of conventional chemicals to go to and say, we're going to destroy whatever. I'll tell you a little story about being organic. I'd say 25 years ago, we went to a agricultural meeting where they were talking about beneficials and how they helped the farm. And this gentleman put up a slide, and he showed what looked like an irregular blob of sponge. And he said, anybody have these on their farm? And of course, one lady across the room raised her hand and said yes. And I hesitated to raise my hand, because we had thousands of these on the farm when we picked peppers in the fall. And he looked at me and he said, how many do you have? And I said, honestly, thousands. We lost track. What kind of problem do we have? He says, you have a wonderful problem. He said, every one of those is a praying mantis egg mess. And he said, there's 100 of them in there waiting to jump out in spring. Two might survive, because they tend to be carnivorous. But he said, you are absolutely an organic farm. He said, I don't have to know anything about you. He said, there's no way you would have that many egg masses all over your farm. So I think a lot of times farmers who are conventional farmers are doing a good job, but they don't realize that when they apply some of these chemicals that are man-made, that they're destroying the beneficials along with the nasty, whatever they want to get rid of. And it sets everything out of balance, and then after that, they're committed to chemicals. So we don't do that. We're just all natural. in the grain products, we have white popcorn, which is Hullis. It's our own variety. We also raise a yellow dent corn that we grind into cornmeal. We also have actually a red and a blue popcorn. Those we just sell on the ear, but they do pop off. People can pop them right off the cob. We have whole wheat flour. It's a spring hard wheat. It's excellent for bread, good for making pizza dough, anything that you want a higher protein wheat. We also have buckwheat, which is is known as a poor man's crop. Years ago in the Depression, a lot of people grew buckwheat because you didn't have to put any fertilizer or any nutrients with it, and you could put it on the poorest ground, and it still would lodge and or fall over on you if it got too heavy. So we grow that not because of it, that kind of crop, but there is a demand for that as a flour and as a pancake mix. Buckwheat, as far as I know, is the first, it's actually not even a grain, it's a fruit, was produced into flour, and that was the first bread that was made from buckwheat. Just about everything that we grow is a natural selection of type of products, and we raise all these different things and actually save seed from all our products so that the next year we're growing a crop from the previous year's crop by selecting the best pods, like in peppers or the best tomatoes, true to variety. And even in our corn, we do use a hybrid corn where you take and you take inbred lines that are crossed, but that's not genetically modified. Genetically modified is when you would take, say, for instance, corn genetics and mix it with tomato genetics. I don't know what you end up with, but I hope you don't end up with corn on the tomatoes or tomatoes on the corn. But we don't use any genetically modified organisms. I don't believe in that. Our baked goods are made all by the family. I mentioned everybody before, and we actually have four extra people that help us when we bake. We spend a whole day at a commercial kitchen that we rent. Everything is made from scratch. Like today, we have all kinds of fruit pies. This may be the end in the next week, probably, for fruit pies, because we buy fruit from another farmer in the market. It's here on Fridays. His name's Samascott. And most of it, not some other farmers we also deal with, but we get all our fruit from this region, from local farmers, freeze it in season, and then we have it ready to bake out of season. So we're able to have pies like Very Berry and Strawberry Rhubarb. Another one I like is Peach Blueberry, and there's one that's just plain strawberry. But we do have a little pumpkin left. I know we'll have pumpkin, and we have some apples left, so we'll have apple and pumpkin for sure. Actually, I feel like I'm almost a Native American. Our family came here in 1620 and settled at what now is today 25 Broadway. If you go down there, you'll see the big bull across the street, and directly across the street to the west was our family farm, and it was started in 1620. It was called New Amsterdam back then. We are at Green Market. This is our 29th year, and we're here on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. We start Wednesdays and Fridays in April, Saturdays year-round.
My name is John Adams, and we farm in Wawarsing, New York, and we are Hudson Valley Organic. We grow certified organic microgreens, mostly cruciferous greens, the ones that contain the antioxidants that are good for you. And we also grow sprouts, bean sprouts, radish and broccoli sprouts. Broccoli sprouts also have the antioxidants that are in cruciferous greens. I've been farming for a long time. I've been at Union Square Green Market for 25 years, and we started farming in 1981. My grandfather had an apple farm called Tony's Fruit Farm in Modena, New York. It was 115 acres of apples, peaches, pears, plums. And in his retirement, he and I had a market garden behind my father's house on the corner of the farm. And I put up a small greenhouse and started growing fresh herbs. And that was our original concept, was that I liked health food. I liked the idea of health food, but I thought it wasn't interesting or tasty enough. I thought that herbs would make the difference. When we first started growing them, back then people didn't know about fresh herbs, weren't interested, so we moved on to other products. My favorite thing to do with the microgreens is to just eat it plain as a salad, although it could be used as a garnish or it can be used on sandwiches. My mother used to make salad dressing. Everybody wanted to know her recipe because it was so good. But there was no recipe. It was red wine vinegar, which she would call salad oil. Nowadays, I would use olive oil and garlic salt. And it's fantastic. You put a little bit of that on the microgreens, and it's wonderful. Another passion of mine is farmland preservation. For the past 13 years, I've been trying to convince New York State that the state-owned farmland should be preserved with agricultural conservation easements. I think we're finally starting to see some progress now, and I think in the next year or two, we're going to see that happen in our hometown of Warsaw, New York. In the year 2000, we started a farmer's market in the village of Ellenville, New York, and as one of our promotional events at the farmer's market, we had a blueberry festival, which will be into its 10th year this year. And the Blueberry Festival celebrates the 20th century industry of huckleberry picking in the Shongham Mountains above Ellenville, New York.
My name is Fred Price. With my wife, we are Fifth Floor Farm Kitchen. We're at Union Square on Saturdays. We've been doing green markets for more than 25 years. When we started, the green market had a difficulty getting people into the market. There weren't enough farmers, so they let in bakers. Farmers were skeptical that they could make a living bringing their stuff here. Eventually, it came to pass that they were going to enforce the law that that you cannot have any food business in a New York City apartment. We were in a five-floor walk-up in Inwood. That's why we were a fifth-floor kitchen. And so we had to find a place to move to with a legal kitchen. So everybody in the food business starts out the same way. Your friends say, this is delicious. You should open a bakery or a restaurant or do catering or something. So you do what you can in your apartment. Then you go down to the street. You find the cheapest empty store you can find. At that time, rents had skyrocketed. And we lived in Inwood. And the cheapest neighborhood smallest store we could get was $1,500 a month, which nowadays would be very cheap. But at that time, it was extraordinarily expensive. That's a lot of 50-cent cookies. So then we looked in the Bronx. Then we looked in Yonkers. Then we went farther and farther up the Hudson. Then we went over to the Delaware. I liked river towns. We were long-distance hikers and backpackers, and I liked river towns. Finally, we ended in Sullivan County. And my wife got seduced by the sound of little chicks and ducklings that were there every spring. Beep, 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 beep. So we went home with a shoebox full of chickens and ducks. So I built a duck house and a hen house and a goose barn. And we used the eggs for our baking. So we became poultry farmers. They say the first year of farming is free. After that, every predator, every pest, every insect knows where you live, and they'll be back. In Jeffersonville, we were 125 miles from here, at Union Square. Now we are 250 miles away. We ended up in the Finger Lakes, but we got 10 acres and an old apple orchard. I'm a baker with my wife, Fei Chan. Fei is Chinese, as you can tell by the name. She wanted me to start cooking. This was before we got into the food business. And she was the oldest child of a large, poor family. She's been cooking since she was 9 years old. I said, I'll never be as good as you. She said, I don't care, just so it's different. I said, well, I can do that. My specialty is Hungarian, but Fei being Chinese, they don't eat much sweets. She's interested in savory. Because we had been to Vienna and to Budapest, she adopted Viennese crusts and Hungarian crust and used those to make savory things that would go into those crusts, vegetable pies, vegetable turnovers. She makes a B&B pancake, which is a little bit like a falafel because it's garbanzo beans and barley, B&B beans and barley. And it's savory, pretty subtle. People who like falafel like it a lot. Our best-selling item is a rice and nut roll, brown rice that is baked, and it's combined with Brazil nuts, sesame seed, fish sauce, and a little Chinese preserved cabbage. She makes muffins. The muffins are sweetened with honey, usually made with wild blueberries because we have a friend who lives on a mountaintop that's as long as he's harvesting wild blueberries, we buy everything he'll sell us, and then we freeze them because blueberries freeze well. The honey we buy here, the red bean pasty, and almond tartlets are sweetened with maple syrup we get from him. Apple pies, pears, all the fruits we buy locally. When we say local, it might be here at the farmer's market, or it might be where we live. But we support farmers wherever we are.
Retrovore.com is growing, and we're pleased to announce that the site is now in beta. You can visit Retrovore.com for information on how to build your own urban garden and get more details about our own Carrie Truman's interview with Leonard Lopate on WNYC. Get well read, get well fed, and get growing.
You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Retrovore and join our Facebook group. The Retrovore Union Square Market Report is produced by Matt and Amy of Retrovore.com. Remember, the future
is in the pasture.
See you next week.